Susan Ann Schmidt.
Ann is for?
Ann.
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 Where were you born?
I was born in Blue Island, Illinois, suburb of Chicago.
Wow. I'm going to Chicago in a couple of weeks. I'll tell you about that.
What are you
going to
do?
I'll tell you later. I don't know a whole lot about you, but I know that you have been a doctor and a practicing doctor in Africa. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was that through the Peace Corps?
No, it was very interesting. We were going to go to South America through the Peace Corps, decided they didn't give sufficient training, so we put ourselves through a program in Liverpool, a diploma of tropical medicine and hygiene. While we were in England, we got notified that they were not placing physicians, which turned out not to be true, but instead went on to Africa on our own. And it took us 5 months to get across to Africa. We wanted to go to Tanzania, and then it took us 3 months in Tanzania to get a job, and we were recruited as transnationals by the Canadian equivalent of the Peace Corps, which is the Canadian University Services Overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So half of our salary came from the Tanzanian government and half came from the Canadians.
Did you work in a rural situation there?
Mm-hmm. Looked a lot like here. It was red clay like Virginia, but mountains like here, even steeper. Cold, rainy, very different from the rest of Tanzania. For instance, it was the first mountain chain from the Indian Ocean, so we got all the rain. And it didn't snow, but it got down in the 40s. And I had beautiful cauliflower and marigolds and broccoli and no cabbage butterflies or moths at all. So it was great. Mm-hmm. It was great. But it was very rural.
Were there other parallels to this besides the way it looked?
I think the most amazing thing that I found there were the family structure, the closeness of the families. In some ways it was similar, in some ways it was very different. It contrasted differently from the United States as a whole in terms of extended family. There was no child abuse. Children were precious, and there was always some place for them to go if you didn't want to be with your kids. And when Grandpa was ready to go home, six men would show up with a litter to carry him home, even if his village was 20 miles away. There was no nursing home placements. That was very different, I think, in terms of... It was a shock to come back to this country and to see old people that didn't have any place to go, or kids that had been abused. And I think they didn't have very much there, but they gave their families what they had. That was... Because people always say, what was it like? Was it good? Was it bad? You know, it was very good and it was very bad. And I think they had some things that we have lost. They certainly did not have a lot of what we had. But it was a very intense, very interesting experience. Never saw kids die before, other than trauma or leukemia or whatever. And I lost a child a week on the PEDS ward, at least a child a week. To many of them were preventable diseases, measles, pneumonia, whooping cough, you know, things that we don't see here. And I get very incensed when someone starts telling me about how they don't want their kids to have immunizations, I guess because of that experience, because I saw so many kids die of what is a preventable disease. And I've seen epidemics when we were in England. There was a whooping cough epidemic, and so I'm not real tolerant of that.
When you came back from there, then, did you come here?
When we came back from Africa, we went back to Jackson County, where we had our farm. When we did our internship in 75, we decided that we didn't want to do a big block of time in training. We wanted to practice. We didn't want to stay in training for a long time. So we did an internship and then worked 7 months in an emergency room to get enough money to go overseas, because we had to support ourselves while we were traveling and looking for a job. And when we came back, we had our farm, and we wanted to do more training. So we did 4 more years on a shared basis in Charleston at CAMC doing the family practice residency. So we came back to Jackson County, where we had our home, and then came up here 2 years ago.
Did you practice in Jackson County?
Most of that time we were in training. We did a year's internship, the time in the emergency room, practicing... Essentially, I did the same thing in the emergency room. I did an ambulatory care program we did off of the emergency room. So it was family practice, but it was in a hospital setting. And then when we came back again, it was 4 years of the residency. So it was practicing, but it was in training. Mostly in hospital. Half time in the clinic, half time in the hospital the last 2 years.
So you came here in...
March of 84.
What did you find here?
What did we find here?
What was Tucker County?
What was Tucker County? When we... I speak we because I think we pretty much agreed on what we were looking for. We had traveled through West... We knew we didn't want to be in Charleston or around Charleston. Didn't want to be in the city. The area we lived in, Jackson County, was very rural, but it was very depressed. People would break into each other's cellars and steal food, and it was not the area that we wanted to be in terms of families and community support. So we looked around West Virginia for a place where we felt we could stay, and we traveled through the Cranberry and through Marlington and up through Dolly Sods and different areas, and we liked Tucker County. We liked the area around Blackwater Falls, and we liked this area. We originally were looking in Franklin, which we also liked, and the July before we were going to be finished, they really didn't need another physician in Franklin at that time. This position was open, but we came up 2 years before that to visit with the doctors who were here, who were in the middle of a big struggle with the board, and it was in the middle of a snowstorm, and we were not real impressed with St. George. But then we came back in July, and it was real different. So we talked to the board members, and they were pretty flexible about what we wanted to do, and decided to come to Tucker County. I like this area. It's very different from communities even close by. Most of the people that we see most of them don't have much money, but they're real hardworking, and people have been really good to us. I think partly because we've come in as physicians, partly because we have been into farming and have done some things that they can relate to. We've been trying to reclaim our farm, and they see the fencing going up, and they see us trying to get back some of the land that has turned into forest. And I think people respect that probably as much as the medicine. Maybe more. Mm-hmm. But I like this area. It's beautiful. Every day when I drive to work along that stream, I just think of so many people get to spend 2 weeks a year in a place like this, and I get to live here all the time. I like it.
What kinds of, are there any kinds of health problems that are peculiar to a place like this?
As opposed to the rest of West Virginia, as opposed to the rest of...
That are somehow related to the terrain or related to people living in isolation, relative isolation, or I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I'm not sure. I think...
Is there a lot of alcoholism here because people are lonely, for example, because the mountains are barriers to having a more active social life, or is there...
There is a lot of alcoholism. I don't know if that has anything to do with specifically this area. It's interesting in that it tends to get translated into people either not drinking at all or drinking too much. Very few people here, in terms of patients that I see, drink socially. People either don't drink at all or they drink way too much. And probably the people who don't drink at all have somebody in their family who drinks way too much. So there certainly is a lot of it. In some ways, I don't see the things that I saw in the city because of the extended family. Grandma may not always be right, but at least she's reassuring. And much of the emergency room visits that I saw in the city were young mothers who didn't know what to do with a cold, with a fever, with a runny nose. You know, they really didn't know what was serious and what wasn't. And you don't see as much of that here, because usually either mom or grandma or somebody in the family has some sense of what's going on. See a lot of hypertension. I see mostly gynecology. That's probably the biggest thing I see because I'm a woman, and I'm the only woman from many counties around. So I see people from far away even for their gynecology. Next to that, I think the major diagnosis we see is hypertension. And the Appalachian diet probably has more than its share of salt. Because I think the American diet's pretty high, but it's real high here. How did somebody sneak in?
We were talking about hypertension.
Hypertension,
from a lot
right.
Of salt in the diet.
No, fried salty food. I guess I grew up in a traditional Midwestern family where you have meat, potatoes, salad, and a vegetable. Uh-huh. And when I came here, people had 30 things at every meal and they were all fried. I never heard of fried onions or fried tomatoes or fried everything.
And a full salt cellar.
And a full salt, yeah. Yeah.
On top of that.
Yeah. Or else fried in bacon grease. That's never had that before either. Although my dad used to spread cold bacon grease on bread. That was a real German trip. But I see a lot of hypertension. I see a lot of different things. I'm not sure if there's anything special in terms of being isolated. I think probably more, not so much physical problems as some of the mental things. I see, because I'm a woman, I see a lot of women. And a lot of women confide in me when they come for their care about what's going on at home, because I always ask them. And I think that's very difficult. They are very isolated. They don't always have the support. They may or may not have family close by, since most people tend to move where their spouses are from. Most women tend to move where their spouses are from. So they're often with their in-laws and not with their parents. And I don't know if it's the time of year or what's the moon or whatever. But just a lot of women come and talk about what's going on in their family. And I think traditional family values are breaking down and people aren't sure what to substitute in its place. And I think because women have been the disadvantaged parties in many cases, they want change. Their husbands are resistant to change. And sometimes it's, most husbands around here do nothing at home because it's woman's work. But yet many of their spouses are now going out to work. And there's a big change in terms of the family. Women being burdened with outside work plus the housework because husband won't help. And I'm sure that feminism will eventually come to West Virginia. Yeah, I'm amazed. The 16 and 17-year-olds that I see are not the 16 and 17-year-olds I saw 10 years ago, even in Tucker County. So even though we have a high pregnancy rate and, a lot of different changes, that things are changing. The other thing that amazes me here is the level of sexual activity in teenagers, because there is nothing else to do, and that's what people do. And I would guesstimate probably 80-90% of the high school sexually active. And so we're seeing some of the venereal diseases that are on the rise other places. We're seeing a lot of them in Tucker County. Mm. And unfortunately, there's not the education to back up the contraception and such. We see a lot of teenagers who get pregnant. Mm. So I'm hoping to make an impact on that at some point. I keep a low profile because I think that's the... people know where they can get contraception. And I think the best thing to do is for me to keep the lowest profile possible, because word of mouth is how teenagers search out their contraception.
You don't want to get all tied up on that pro-life...
I don't want to put anything on the front page of the Parsons Advocate in terms of what I'm doing. And it's a political problem, because they won't give me a family planning contract, even though they know that I do a good job and that I do the cheerleader exams and that I see people. There's some politics with the health department, and the state is not willing to give me family planning. So I've had to do everything on my own. I've had to get an independent contract with Rocky Mountain Planned Parenthood. I write off a lot of the PAPs that I do. I found someone in the state lab of hygiene who will do my PAP smears for free. But it's all undercover. It's not state funded. Well, I've even had to twist some arms to do that. And it's very frustrating. And I'm trying to attack that problem as aggressively as I can without losing what I've gotten so far. But that's kind of where I'm at politically in terms of Tucker County, is with respect to reproductive freedom and such.
It's not enough to know medicine.
Well,
you have to know how to administer it.
Right, right. I think that's a big part of it. I think there are a lot of yohos who know their drugs but aren't effective practitioners. And I think it's sort of like in Rules for Radicals. I think if you want to change things and that means getting a crew cut and wearing a three-piece suit, that's what you do if you're truly a radical. if you want to wear long hair and alienate people, I mean, that has its own place. I think it was easier for us to come into this community because we followed two physicians who were relatively radical in terms of their appearance and such. And therefore, you know, Woody had a beard and Woody wore blue jeans to work, and we seem so much more conservative, even though we're not. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's made it easier.
Yeah, appearances are real important.
I wear denim skirts, but I don't wear blue jeans to work. That's okay.
Well, I don't wear denim skirts.
I don't think it would go over big
into. I don't want to call all the attention to myself.
I remember when Caleb got into pink dresses, and there was the problem in terms of how do you deal with a four-year-old who wants to wear skirts in a. We went to the senior dinner because I was speaking again. And my son decided that my daughter was really dressed up and he wanted to wear a dress. And he had a dress. He picked out a flaming red dress with blue flowers that we let him buy at the secondhand trailer in Parsons. And he wanted to wear that dress. And it was really hard to tell a four-year-old how he could wear that dress, but there were a lot of seniors who maybe wouldn't understand. And so instead he wore this flaming Mexican shirt. He decided that that was pretty too. So we felt a little bit more comfortable with him in his shirt.
That would be an alternative for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard for boys.
Yeah.
Because there aren't too many pretty things in the same way that there are for little girls.
I know. Well, let's see. So you've been here, by the time the flood hit, you've been here.
A year and a half.
You were away at that time, were you?
I was home. As a matter of fact, I was on my way to Parsons to go to Nautilus with a friend of mine. And the only reason we didn't get caught in the flood, because it's normally when we would have been there, was the people who were watching, she was going to pick up my son, the people who were watching my son could not get to the road. And so they were delayed by about an hour because of their culvert backing up and their road flooding. So she finally called me from my house and said the rain was pretty bad, maybe we should cancel. And by the time I passed her on the road going to my house, stretches of it were underwater. So my babysitter called and said that she would bring my daughter here or else she would keep her. And everyone else said, it was just rain. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, the river has come up 8 inches in the last 15 minutes, and I think my bridge is going to wash out. And I thought she was being an alarmist. But she brought my daughter here, dropped her off, went back home again, and a half hour later her bridge was gone, and she was cut off for 3 days. So I had my daughter, and then I went home and got my son. And we were home that night. My husband was in Morgantown. He'd been in Rollsburg, and he drove up to an indigent care committee up in Morgantown. Didn't get any information about how bad it was. Listened to the radio, and the only thing he could get was WLS out of Chicago. So he started home at 1 o'clock in the morning and was blocked in about 12 different places. And finally got home at 4 o'clock the next afternoon. Spent 13 hours on the road trying to get home.
Normally,
Not even that. But he came down, was blocked coming across, ended up in Grafton, then in Philippi, and couldn't get across. Slept 3 hours in the emergency room, went back up, got across, couldn't get down, went back up, you know, that sort of thing. Helped people put up their fences and finally moved some roadblocks and drove across a river that was underwater, a bridge that was underwater, to get onto 50 and come down the mountain. So he wasn't home, but we were home. We were home. It was funny because, again, my friend I was going to meet with, she called and said, asked me if I had a sump pump because her mother's basement was flooding and it had never flooded before. And she was in Parsons, or in St. George here. And I talked to her, and then I talked to the head of the senior center because I was supposed to do a clinic for pneumonia prevention to give the Pneumovax the next day. And she'd gone down to the senior center, and she said they had 2 feet of water. This is about 8 o'clock. And they just lifted the plants up on the desk, and there was nothing they could do, so they just left. And she decided to cancel the immunization clinic. And then, and she said the water was up to the door of Nautilus and that Parsons was flooding. And about 15 minutes later, the phone went dead. And so we were really out of touch with what went on the rest of the night until the next morning. And I did some house calls in St. George, sent a lady to Oakland Hospital, and then I had the four-wheel drive truck, so I drove into St. George on Tuesday afternoon, the day after the flood, and it was unbelievable. It was totally unbelievable. The road through town was underwater, the power lines were down and into the water, the trailers in front of the school were gone, the post office was washed, houses were just gone, And got out in front of an old woman's house. She'd spent the night upstairs. And it was so amazing. I walked into her house, and I've seen floods before, but I've never seen the mud flood like we had here. And there was 3 feet of mud. Her organ was laying over on its side. Her freezer was over on the side. Her house was totally destroyed. When the water came up, she'd grabbed her quilt off the quilt frame and went upstairs to her upper bedroom. And she sat in the doorway to her upper bedroom and watched the water come up the steps. And she couldn't believe it was that high outside. So she thought it was pouring into her house and then it just couldn't get out. She really didn't believe that the water was up that high outside. And so she said she watched it come up and it came up to the second stair from the top. And then she sat there and it sat there. And then it started going down, so she thought it'd be okay. So she went to bed. You know, and when I went there the next day, she was still in her pajamas with her booties on and her house coat, sitting on her doorstep upstairs, and I mean, just total disaster all around her with her quilt. You know, just the house next door washed away, gone, completely gone. Just, you know. And you wonder if people like that, if they knew how bad it was, if they would have moved, or if it would have been so overwhelming that they would have stayed where they were. But I think she was 83 or 93, something like that. Old lady.
Didn't she tell about it?
She came down for a tetanus shot a couple days later. I don't know at this point. I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure she's here, because so many of the... St. George is almost gone, because it was largely elderly people whose families came and got them. So, you know, what was here before and what's here after is just such a minority of the people that were here. Mostly the younger people stayed. And so many of the older people have gone with family or have gone up to Cortland Acres to the independent housing up there, have relocated somewhere else. So just if you go down the line of where people are, there are a few trailers here in town, but they tend to be younger people, younger families. And so many of the older people have gone. I have one family up in the nursing home, John and Gertrude Auvel, really interesting people. And the nurse, I was up in the nursing home last week, and the nurses came and said that they went in and he looked bad, and he said he felt bad, but he couldn't tell them where he felt bad. And I had never taken care of him before the last month or two when he came into the nursing home with his wife. They were farmers down here. He lost his home, he lost all his equipment, he lost his tractors, he lost his barn, he lost everything that he had. And when I went into his room, I asked him how he was doing, and he said, okay. And I said, and the nurses said that you were feeling bad, can you tell me about it? And he said, well, it's just kind of all over. And I said, are you feeling depressed, John? And he said, do you know what I've lost? I lost my whole life full of work. I lost my equipment and my barn and my house. I lost everything I had. And then the week after the stroke, after the flood, his wife had a stroke. And she was on the board of health. She was a very sharp lady. And he called her a shy kid. He said, she's just like a shy kid. And she kind of functions on about maybe a four-year-old level, maybe not even that, 2 to 4-year-old level. She can say, hi, how are you? You know, fine, make little small talk, but she stares and she picks and there's nothing left. So he lost everything. He lost everything he had plus his wife of 30 years, in essence. Her body's there, but not much else is there. And I asked him if he'd been down. He's not seen his house since the flood. He's really not seen many people. And it was just really hard, because I think the only thing I could offer him was maybe the possibility of his living in an independent unit, since he really doesn't need to be in the nursing home for himself, but she does. So he's either going to have to give up the privacy and continue to stay in the nursing home with no privacy, or maybe separate from her and move to some kind of independent housing. But that's really tragic. I mean, he felt he was doing as well as he could, but, you know, he had been on every committee and every organization, and he had been really active in the community. And now he's been taken from his home, from his community, from his wife, from everything that he did. And it's really hard. It's really hard to tell somebody that they have a lot to live for when you're not sure, you know, or when they're not sure, But I think that, for me, those have been the kind of tragedies that have been so hard. There's another man who I've taken care of his wife for about the last year. And he had cancer of the larynx about 10 years ago and has a laryngectomy, but has been doing very well. And his wife has Parkinson's disease and has an organic brain syndrome and has been bedridden for about the last 6 months, 8 months. And he lived down in the pulp mill bottom, had a little house and his car, and didn't have a whole lot, but... And he waited on her hand and foot. They wanted to put her in a nursing home, and he couldn't bear that. And so he got up with her, and he turned her every hour. She did not have a bed sore on her. I mean, he took wonderful care of her. Tube-fed her, changed her, had a lift to hoist her onto the bedside commode. I mean, just took care of her so much. And by the time the flood came, the water was coming up the street, and he realized they'd have to move her, so they got an ambulance. And they got her out. It was like halfway up the wheels. By the time his family, who came with him, went in to get a suitcase for him and came back out, they had to wade up to their chest through water. He moved up with someone else up Quality Hill, and then Francis died within the week. And in his case, he lost his home, his car, all their furniture, all their photos, all their possessions, everything they had, plus his wife, who he dearly loved, plus his full-time job, in a sense, because she had been his full-time job for about the last year. And he's living in a little FEMA trailer, kind of up a mountain, and the church bought him a little 52 Chevy Nova, so he at least has some transport, but with the snow and everything, he's not really been doing much. And I really feared for him, because I think he grieved openly, which I think was good. I mean, he could cry, and he could talk about what was going on. His wife was very religious, and when she was in a car accident, she had written some things before she started losing her mind about, it was a prayer to be read when she died, and it was kind of to the Lord, you know, take care of this daughter because of such and such, and take care of my husband because of such and such. And she had always been the pillar in that family. He had fallen apart and he had gotten upset, and she had been the pillar. And then over the last year or two, as she lost her mind, he had to assume that role. He had to become the strength. And he felt that he took care of her because she would have taken care of him. I mean, they had a real loyalty to each other. And I don't know, I really feared for him. He's doing okay. I had called the seniors to see if we could get him involved. And while the weather was nicest last week, he did go down to lunch with the seniors every day, which was a real big step, because he had pretty much been house-ridden in terms of his wife. He didn't go anywhere and he didn't do anything, and he'd cut off all his social contacts. You know, and I'm hoping that he can get involved, but it's hard. You know, to lose any one of those things, to lose a wife or to lose a house or to lose a job, but to lose everything at the same time is real hard. It's real, real hard. And those people just stand out, I think, in terms of so many younger people say. And I have one lady, I take care of her parents, and she lost, her house was gone. And they found an oak tabletop and a gun cabinet, and that's all they have left of everything that they had. But she said, we're young, and we didn't have that much, and it wasn't that long ago that we didn't have anything. And when I see my mom having to clean up her house, I'm not so sorry that it went down the river, you know, and you see people like that, and it's encouraging. But they have the youth to rebuild and the spirit to rebuild. And I worry much more about the older people, much more about the older people, because they don't feel like they have the options or the strength or the energy. I think when Thanksgiving came and the waters came up and people had just cleaned out their house and they thought that they were going to get flooded again, a lot of people said, I couldn't do it a second time. I didn't think I was going to be able to get through it the first time, but we did, and I couldn't do it a second time. And a lot of people took water again this last week when the river came up, and it was real hard. It was just like a sore place that was just getting better, and it kind of got bumped, you know. And a lot of people are reconsidering. You know, there's a lot more winter up in Davis, but there's not any water. And I think a lot of people are looking about where they want to live because they don't want to move away from their families, but people don't want to go through that again. And I think that's reasonable. I sure wouldn't buy a house in the Palm Beach Bottom, even if it was cheap. I have a friend who's trying to sell me hers cheap. I'm not interested.
Mm-hmm. You've given some real vivid examples of older people. Are there health problems in general that you've noticed?